Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to another edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. During the Cold War, the U.S. nuclear stockpile reached more than 30,000 nuclear weapons. Research and production of these weapons resulted in large volumes of nuclear waste and materials, some of the most dangerous materials known to mankind, posing significant environmental risks and challenges. With us today to discuss her efforts in this area is our very special guest, Dr. Inez Triay, Assistant Secretary for Environmental Management at the U.S. Department of Energy. Welcome, Doctor. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Also joining us from IBM is Barb Hudson. Barb, great to have you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Doctor, I always like to start out to give our listeners a context around organizations, and in this case, the Department of Energy. Could you give us an overview of energy's history and mission?
Absolutely. Be happy to. In 1977, President Jimmy Carter actually signed the U.S. Department of Energy Organization Act. And since then, the Department of Energy has worked in the national economic and energy security of the United States. We have also worked on scientific and technological innovation. I would like to point out that the Department of Energy has under its purview national laboratories across the country that are premier centers of excellence in science and technology. In addition to that, the Department of Energy has, as part of its purview, the Environmental Management Program. And the Environmental Management Program is the office that actually is responsible for cleaning up the legacy of the Cold War. The Department of Energy, as part of its mission, also has a national security, has nonproliferation, a mission, as well as the nuclear weapons mission of the Department of Energy is a major part of our portfolio. In total, the Department of Energy, for instance, in fiscal year 2009, received $26 billion of funding. In the Recovery Act, the Department of Energy received overall $36.7 billion of funding. In addition to that, we are a very vast organization. We have on the order of 14,000 federal employees across the Department of Energy. In the Environmental Management Program are about $6 billion of that overall $26 billion.
Wonderful. Perhaps with that broader context, you could tell us how the Office of Environmental Management fits in and supports the overall mission of energy.
As I was saying, the Department of Energy has the nuclear weapons mission, and we clean up the legacy of the Cold War. In other words, the environmental legacy of the nuclear weapons production and energy-related research, nuclear energy-related research. We're there to ensure that the legacy of the Cold War is actually dealt with in a cost-effective manner. This cleanup is probably the most complicated cleanup in the world. We have the responsibility of making sure that every single one of the installations that were part of the nuclear weapons production gets cleaned up in collaboration with the states, as well as the tribal nations. The Environmental Management Program links up with the broader energy mission of the Department of Energy because as we finish our cleanup, we have then available vast tracts of land that then could be reused, essentially beneficially reused for other purposes. And one of those purposes could very well be a concept like energy parks. And the Department of Energy is exploring some of those concepts as to what is the beneficial reuse of those vast tracts of lands that are going to be cleaned up as part of our efforts in the Environmental Management Program.
Thank you. As the Assistant Secretary for Environmental Management, could you provide us some of the specific responsibilities and duties that you provide, you know, the purview of your area, how it's organized, and the size of your staff?
Absolutely. The Environmental Management Program was created in 1989. As a matter of fact, this year, we're going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary of our program, and we're extremely proud of everything that we have accomplished. Originally, we had 2 million acres at 108 sites in 35 states. For that reason, we believe that it is so imperative that we have the best personnel available. We have very challenging environments. We work with hazardous and dangerous materials. We probably have to solve some of the most complex technical problems in the environmental field today. So to tell you a little bit about what is our portfolio, in the environmental management program, we have 88 million gallons of highly radioactive waste in underground tanks. We have metric tons of excess nuclear materials that need to be dispositioned. We have spent nuclear fuel as well as contaminated soil and groundwater. We have transuranic waste and low-level waste. Transuranic waste is waste that is contaminated with elements that are heavier than uranium. That's what they are called, transuranic, heavier than uranium, and mostly is plutonium, contaminated waste. In addition to that, we have low-level waste. We have thousands of excess facilities, some of them facilities that are heavily contaminated with excess nuclear materials as well as waste. They sit on contaminated soil and groundwater. So my job, as I come into the department every day, is to make sure that the cleanup is conducted in a safe, secure, and compliant manner, to make sure that we continue to be vigilant about the life cycle cost of this cleanup. This cleanup is hundreds of billions of dollars. The cleanup is going to extend decades, and it is my job to come up with strategic options to shorten that time frame that we're going to need in order to ensure the effective cleanup of the legacy of the Cold War.
So with all that responsibility and duty, what are the top three challenges that you face in your position, and how have you addressed those challenges?
The top three challenges, number one, rigor and discipline in project management. The reason for that is that because of the nature of our work, highly complicated work, you know, with a lot of technical uncertainty, it's very easy for us to declare that we have a total project cost for a particular project. And then as we understand the risks associated with the work and those risks get realized, for us to come back and say, now it's going to cost more and it's going to take longer. That is not acceptable to the Congress. It's not acceptable to the taxpayer. The taxpayer wants to know, how long is it going to take? How much is it going to cost? That's one of the main challenges, being able to establish cost, scope, and schedule for the major projects that we have as part of the environmental management program. The second issue is waste disposition. I was telling you, we have high-level waste to dispose of. The places, the states that are going to be receiving this waste or spent nuclear fuel, there's tremendous amount of rigor and discipline that the Environmental Management Office needs to use in order to make sure that those recipient states know what they're getting. We have a huge responsibility to do things right, to be open and transparent as to the options that we're considering, and to ensure that discussion, you know, to decide on what is the final disposition that occurs in a transparent manner so that the regulators, the states, the tribal nations, the oversight boards understand exactly what is being proposed and can weigh in so that we can address any issues that we may have missed. And then finally, the third issue is always getting the best personnel. We work in a field that is highly complex. We work with hazardous materials as well as radioactivity. We want to make sure that our workers as well as our senior leaders are of the highest caliber. It is all about the people. They are the most prized resource of an organization like ours for that reason. That is always a challenge to recruit and retain the very best personnel.
What about yourself? How did the department recruit and get you into the fold? You've given us an overview of a very critical and important mission that you're leading. Could you give us a bit about your career path? How did you get where you are now?
I finished my PhD at University of Miami in 1985. I'm sure that you and your audience are going to notice an accent, you know, so I might as well come clean here. I was born in Cuba. My parents fled Castro's revolution in 1961. I was born in 58. So I was 3 years old, you know, when my parents left Cuba, and I was raised in Puerto Rico. After that, when I finished high school, I went to University of Miami at Coral Gables to get my bachelor's in chemistry, and then I went on to get my PhD in chemistry. Before I finished my PhD, Los Alamos National Laboratory recruited me through the American Chemical Society. We have clearinghouse as part of the American Chemical Society service to its members. We then moved to Los Alamos in 1985. I got my PhD. I spent some time as a postdoctoral staff member at Los Alamos National Laboratory. And then I started moving up through the ranks to group leader, acting as deputy division director for chemistry. In 1999, then Secretary Bill Richardson recruited me to apply for a position in the government to go to Carlsbad, New Mexico, to be the field manager of the waste isolation pilot plant. I became the field manager at the Carlsbad field office. In 2004, I was transferred to headquarters here in the Department of Energy as the chief operations officer. There, again, went through the ranks to the highest career position in the Environmental Management Office, which is principal deputy assistant secretary. And then when Secretary Hsu came to the department, you know, took over as the secretary, he asked me whether he could ask the president to nominate me for assistant secretary. I was pleased and proud that he asked me. And of course, I said yes. And I was nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate.
That's a wonderful journey. I'm wondering, how have your previous experiences shaped your management style and leadership approach? But more importantly, for you, what are the characteristics of an effective leader?
To me, the best leaders are leaders that care about those that work for them. Everything in an organization occurs because people do it. I mean, there's nothing that happens just because you wish it to happen or you will it to happen. You have to motivate your people and make sure that you have, number one, communicated clearly to them. Number two, make sure that you have an open door policy so that they can participate in creating the vision for the future with you. A sign of a good organization is an organization where the head of the organization is as committed to the mission of the organization and to the objectives as any person, the person that just arrived 6 months ago, an intern that is still learning the ropes. That's a sign of a well-managed organization. To me, if a leader is able to connect with the people, to clearly articulate the things that need to be accomplished, to open the doors for vigorous debate as to how are we going to get to that place of being an excellent organization that can actually accomplish its mission. That is the majority of what a leader needs to do. Everything else is extremely important, but nothing is as important as that being able to connect with your people, motivate them, and be able to be receptive to the different approaches that they want to bring to you. We need to have a clear expectation of ourselves and of our contractors that there is a definite bottom line, probably more of a bottom line than in any other business, because we have asked the taxpayers to trust us with their money. And this is the money of our parents, our brothers, our sisters, our friends. They are paying into these efforts. Therefore, we have even a bigger responsibility than anybody else to deliver on time and on cost. I would like to think that we're all committed to that, and I certainly see a lot of commitment on my federal staff as well as the contractor leadership.
Wonderful. I mean, that's a terrific perspective. What is a safety-first culture? We will explore this with Dr. Inez Triay, Assistant Secretary for Environmental Management at the U.S. Department of Energy, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.